Well, it's good to see everybody out, and we're joined with Gary Keith, and welcome everybody out. And invite you to get your Bibles and follow along as we study from the Scriptures. We're always encouraging people to open the Bibles, and the reason why is because that's our textbook. That's our guide. That's our law. That's our teaching. That's our instruction that emanates from God. And we're just trying to follow the Bible, and that's what we're just promoting, is the Word of Truth and the truth of Jesus Christ. And so we want you to follow along. If you have questions, feel free to call it to our attention. We'll be happy to address any question that you have. In the book of 2 Timothy chapter 3, and in verse 12, Paul says, verse 13, I got 12, I'm wrong. Another senior moment here. It's 13. I know it's 13, but I wrote 12. I'm confused there. All right. It says, "But evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived." Now, what this text tells us is that sometimes when people get involved in wickedness, a lot of times it doesn't get any better. In fact, it gets worse as time goes on. And that what we want to do is look at an Old Testament story about King Saul and going to the witch of Endor in 1 Samuel chapter 28. Because when you look at the life of King Saul, he was doing pretty good when he started out, and then he made some wrong turns. And he just kept making more and more, plummeting further and further in darkness, and this was just the epitome of going to some witch to try to find some information. And it's really, really, really sad that sometimes people, that happens with folks. They may start out good. They get off on the wrong foot. They get off on the wrong track. And the next thing you know, it just gets worse and worse. And that's the story of King Saul. And so we'll look at this story. First off, I want to notice there in chapter 15, where Saul has already made a couple of mistakes. And then he's given direction by God through the prophet Samuel to go and utterly destroy the Amalekites, to bring judgment upon them for their wickedness and their transgressions. And the problem is they spare Agag and some of the best of the flock, and they bring back that in worship to God, thinking that that's, you know, great and God's going to be well pleased, but it wasn't obedience. It was not what God commanded. But I want you to notice the statement of Samuel there in verse 17. It says, "And Samuel said, When thou wast little in thine own sight, wast thou not made head of the tribes of Israel? And the Lord anointed thee king over Israel." You see, when he was little in his own sight, that is, when he had humility, he was appointed king, and things were well, things were good, but then he made some bad choices. And it was like a bad choice, and then another bad choice, and another bad choice, and another bad choice. And ultimately, the last bad choice he makes is in 1 Samuel 28, and that is to go visit this witch, this medium at Endor. But you see, the problem was that he got, the idiomatic phrase, he got too big for his britches. He lifts up in pride. That's the problem. And that's always the problem when people get lifted up in pride, that somehow they are above the law, that somehow they're above what God demands or teaches, and that they can live and do whatever they please. It's big trouble. And that was the story of King Saul. He started out humble. That was good. He was made king. That was good. But the problem was he was lifted up in pride, and he just makes one mistake after another. And so that helps us to see what Paul was talking about there in 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 13. Evil men shall wax worse and worse. And that's the way it was with King Saul. And so we want to look here at the 28th chapter and study this text and some interesting things that are found in the passage here. All right, first off, let's notice there in verse 3, beginning the story. It says, "Now Samuel was dead, and all Israel had lamented him, and buried him in Ramah, even his old city. And Saul had put away those that had familiar spirits and wizards out of the land." Now, that, of course, was according to Old Testament law. You have there in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 18, God speaks pretty plainly about witchcraft, wizards, etc. in this text. Notice there in Deuteronomy chapter 18 in verse 9. When thou art come into the land which the Lord thy God shall give you, thou shalt not learn to do after the abominations of those nations. Just the great wickedness of these Gentile people that were driven out because of their great wickedness. Don't follow and don't learn after their example. There shall not be found among you any one that maketh his son or daughter to pass through the fire. That is, would be involved in this idolatrous worship and offering up their children and sacrifice, etc. Or uses divination, or an observer of times, or an enchanter, or a witch, or a charmer, a consulter with familiar spirits, or a wizard, or a necromancer. Necromancers, a lot of these things sort of overlap. I guess there's some slight variations, but it's people that are mediums, that they're going to talk with the dead. And they're going to have a seance, and they're going to get their Ouija boards out, and they're going to get their tarot cards out, and they're going to try to read the future and all this stuff, and look into astrology and look into the stars to look to the future and to get direction, etc. And unfortunately, a lot of people learned it. And there are still people today that are involved in this kind of nonsense. And it is just nonsense. It's make-believe. It's fairy tale. But there are a lot of people that genuinely do believe in witchcraft. In verse 12, it says, "For all that do these things are an abomination unto the Lord. And because of those abominations, the Lord thy God drove them from before thee." And so that was part of the sins and transgressions of the Gentile nations that inhabited the land of Canaan. And the Israelites came in and destroyed them. Galatians 5, verse 20 talks about the works of the flesh, witchcraft. It is wickedness. It is a work of the flesh. And a lot of people, I'm telling you, still buy into that. There are people that are involved in these types of things and in witchcraft and seances and claiming to talk to the dead and all those types of things. But it's all just a bunch of baloney. It's just a bunch of phooey. It's not true. It is not biblical what takes place. And anyway, we're going to see an interesting event that takes place with this witch of Endor, the one that had this familiar spirit. And so don't waste your money on psychics and all that kind of stuff. It's just a bunch of spiritual garbage and malarkey, and there's nothing to it. It's kind of like the psychic that went bankrupt. They didn't see it coming. So, a little bit of a joke there. You didn't catch that. All right, well, let's move on there. Well, it says, it talks about the Philistines. Now, the Philistines was a Gentile nation that was a neighbor. And they're always kind of a thorn in the side for the Israelites. It says, "And the Philistines gathered themselves together and came and pitched in Shunem. And Saul gathered all Israel together, and they pitched in Gilboa. And when Saul saw the host, that is the army of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart was greatly, greatly trembled." You see, the problem with Saul is that, he's not righteous. There's an interesting proverb over in Proverbs chapter 28. There in Proverbs chapter 28 there, and in number 1, it says, "The wicked flee when no man pursueth, but the righteous are as bold as a lion." You see, Saul was, he had departed from the Lord. The Lord had departed from him. Why? Because of wickedness, transgression, rebellion, and all that he was involved in, and transgressing God's will over and over again. And he was afraid. Well, he ought to be afraid, because he's not righteous. The righteous are bold as a lion. When you have somebody that's dedicated to God, they fully believe the promise of God when God says, "I will never leave thee nor forsake thee," so that we may boldly say, "The Lord is my helper." Hebrews chapter 13. But Saul couldn't say that. He could say, "Well, the Lord is my helper," because he wasn't with the Lord anymore. He'd been away from God and committed transgression after transgression. It says there in verse 6, "When Saul inquired of the Lord answered him not, neither by dreams, by Urim, nor by prophets." Now, that's kind of an interesting point here, that in the Old Testament, God communicated in various ways, various portions. Hebrews chapter 1, verse 1, it says, God who at sundry times, at various times, and in various manners, spake unto the fathers by the prophets, the Hebrew writer says. And we see at least three ways how God communicated His will. Well, first of all, sometimes He communicated His will by dreams. As people would have this dream, I mean just really vivid dreams. Sometimes I have vivid dreams. Generally, they're always crazy. There's always something really odd about them. As a kid, I used to dream that I could swim up in the air, just sort of like you were swimming, and you could just go way up in the air. Now, those were very vivid dreams. But the dreams that people had sometimes were divinely given to communicate information. And you've got lots of cases like that. Even Pharaoh, back in the book of Genesis, he saw these dreams, and then Joseph came and interpreted those dreams. So sometimes God communicated His will by dreams. And then sometimes He communicated His will by the Urim. Now, the Urim was involved in the breastplate of the high priest. And it had various jewels in it. And I don't know whether the jewels just sort of glowed or sparkled or something and giving an answer as they would inquire of the Lord. But somehow the Urim and the Thummim that was involved with the priesthood, that God sometimes communicated His will that way. What's interesting, Saul talks about on down here that he didn't use that. Well, because he had Doeg slay like 85 priests because they happened to be for David. That was part of his insane jealousy that he had, his envy in his heart. And then sometimes God communicated simply by the prophets. But God had not communicated to him. So Saul feels pretty desperate here. Here he's got his army, and there over there on the other side is the army of the Philistines, and he don't know exactly what to do and what's going to happen and what's going to take place, and he wants to find some sort of information. So he seeks this witch, this medium, King James says, familiar spirit. Now, what's interesting about this word that's translated familiar spirit or witch or medium, in the dictionary, it carries the significance of the term mumble, like a ventriloquist. That is, if you've ever seen somebody have like puppets, you know, they sit on stage and they'll have a little puppet, and you know, they're moving the mouth and the head and the eyes and all that, and they're talking for the puppet in ventriloquism. Well, that's what some of these people did. These mediums, they got pretty good at it. Just like if you ever see somebody sitting on stage and you see this puppet and it's talking kind of a different voice than the person sitting there working the puppet. I mean, you just kind of think that, you know, the puppet's almost like talking back and forth. And sometimes people get really good at that. And so it would be with these mediums, these witches, these people with familiar spirits that they're going to call up and you know, maybe it's a dark room and they're calling up some spirit, etc. And then they throw their voice in ventriloquism and it's like, oh, they're really talking to the dead. But it's not so. It's not so. And so Saul, he showing how he's plummeting in the darkness, because back earlier in the ministration, he's putting away the wizards and the witches and either casting them out or executing them, etc. But now he's sort of desperate and he's going to go to a witch, a medium, to try to find an answer. And it's really sad that one would plummet that into that much spiritual and moral darkness. Then Saul said unto servants, seek me a woman that hath a familiar spirit, that I may go to her and inquire of her. And the servant said unto him, behold, there is a woman which hath a familiar spirit at Endor. And Saul disguised himself. You see, the reason he disguised himself, because if you were in the occult of wizards and witches and familiar spirits and etc. And he sort of put people away and either banned them or deported them or executed them. It's like, well, then if you're going to still practice that in the line of Israel, you kind of want to lie low. You know, you kind of want to be under the radar. And what they hear about, there's this one woman, so he disguises himself because you don't go in there as King Saul. I mean, he may be there to deport you or to have you executed. So he disguises himself and puts on other raiment. And he went and two other men with him, and they came to the woman by night. And he said, I pray thee, divine unto me by the familiar spirit, and bring me him up whom I shall name unto thee. And anyway, the woman, she's privy about history, about the reputation in the land of Israel and in those parts, about kind of what Saul had done, as we saw there in verse 3. And the woman said unto him, Behold, thou knowest what Saul had done. Had cut off those that have familiar spirits and the wizards out of the land. Wherefore then layest thou a snare before my life to cause me to die? So she recognizes, hey, you maybe put me in danger here. You know what you're asking? Well, he assures her by saying that he sware to her by the Lord, saying, As the Lord liveth, there shall no punishment happen to thee for this thing. Then said the woman, Whom shall I bring up unto thee? And he said, Bring me up Samuel. So he goes to this witch. He goes to this familiar spirit. He goes to this medium. And, of course, he's dead. Samuel's dead. And somehow that maybe she would have the capability of communicating with Samuel. But, of course, wizardry and witchcraft and all that, it's a bunch of fake. It's malarkey. But God divinely intervenes in what takes place. And we see that when we look in verse 12. It says, And when the woman saw Samuel, she cried with a loud voice. And the woman spake to Saul, saying, Why hast thou deceived me, for thou art Saul? Now, why did she cry out? Well, because if you were involved in ventriloquism and all this pretense and the sham of your practice, and then somebody actually does come forward, so, whoa, yikes. You know, it's like, whoa, she's really taken back in surprise. Now, there's an interesting point to see here. It says, And when the woman saw Samuel. Now, that's the inspired writer recording that. The woman saw Samuel. Now, what she says, as we'll see on in verse 13, she calls it gods. I mean, she didn't know else to explain it. There's some deities or something there. But the general state of the dead is described there in Ecclesiastes. In the book of Ecclesiastes, notice there in chapter 9, Ecclesiastes chapter 9, notice there verses 5 and 6. It says, For the living know that they shall die. We all know that, don't we? We're going to die. Yeah? Yeah, we're going to die. We know that. The living know we're going to die. I know I'm going to die. I don't know if I'm going to die today or tomorrow or next year or 10 years from now. I know I'm going to die. And we all know that. I hope we know that. So the living know that we shall die. But the dead know not anything. Now, that doesn't mean that the dead know not anything in an absolute sense, that they are totally unconscious, as some teach and propose. That is, people, when they die, they're dead like Rover. They're dead all over, and there's no conscious existence. That's not so. But when you look at the verse, what? What does it say? But the dead know not anything, neither have they any more reward. Well, if you take that in a blatant statement that they never have a reward again, they're never going to be raised from the dead, they're not going to receive reward for evil, reward for good, for service to God. Well, if you took it in an absolute sense, it wouldn't make sense. For the memory of them is forgotten, and their love and their hatred and their envy is now perished, neither have they any more portion forever of anything done under the sun. So, what you look at verse 5, it is qualified by the statement of things done under the sun. That is, the dead know not anything of things done under the sun. Neither have they any reward of things done under the sun. The memory of them is forgotten of things done under the sun. I mean, go ahead and look at some of these graveyards out here in the graveyard, some of these names out here. I mean, you can go read some of these names. I'd say a big bunch of the people, especially on this side of the old cemetery, they're all forgotten. A big majority of all these graves, these people are forgotten. Nobody even knows about them. Don't know anything about them. Don't know how old. Well, you probably know how old they are, but if you read the grave markers and you figure that out, but they don't know much about the, if anything, other than the name, the day they're born, the day they're born, because that's written on there and all that. The memory of them is forgotten. That is of things done under the sun. You see, the dead know not anything of what's going on under the sun. So when people say, oh, yeah, I was in a seance and I talked to great-grandma and great-grandma's looking over me or my grandmother's looking over me or my granddaddy's looking over me, they know not anything of what's going on in the sun. Period. It's over. They don't know what's happening. They've left the scenes of planet Earth. That is the biblical teaching, that they know not what's going on. Now, they take the information with them when they die. And so you would have like the story of the rich man there in Luke 16. He takes that information with him when he dies, and he knows that he's got five brothers and they're living just as wicked as he was, and they're heading for the same place, and he wants them to be warned. But really, the dead know not anything. That's the point. And so people say they can communicate the dead. It's not so. But what takes place here is the divine intervention here in 1 Samuel chapter 28. In a sense, it is a divine rebuke for Saul for his great wickedness to go seek out one that has a familiar spirit, this witch of Endor. And she's just shocked because this is not the norm. This is not the way. You know, this is not the way I had it planned out. That I had. You know, the way I do things as a medium and ventriloquism and all that. And you know, you have secret things and stuff ruffles and moves. Maybe you got strings to pull something. And what was that? And well, etc. No, she was a fake. Then notice there as you continue on in verse 13. It says, "And the king said unto her, Be not afraid, for what sawest thou? And the woman said to Saul, I saw gods ascending out of the earth." Now, that was her take about the matter. Let me show you a parallel point in the book of Matthew chapter 14. In Matthew chapter 14, there's two verses here. Matthew chapter 14 and verse 25. "And the fourth watch of the night," that's between 3 o'clock in the morning to 6 in the morning. So that's wee hours of the morning. "And the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went unto them walking on the sea." Now, that's the inspired writer telling us what's in fact taking place. Jesus is walking on the sea early morning, between 3 and 6 in the morning. Now notice verse 26. "And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, It is a spirit. And they cried out for fear." They think it's some sort of phantom, some sort of ghost. It's not really a person. You know, real people can't walk on water. And so they see this image of somebody walking on the water in the early morning hours, and they say, It is a spirit. Well, that's just their take and their explanation of the matter. That's not, in fact, reality of what takes place. The reality is, verse 25, Jesus is walking on the water. Verse 26 is their opinion, their viewpoint, their comprehension of what is taking place here. You see that point? The inspired writer says it was Jesus. The apostles say, oh, it's the Spirit. Well, they were wrong. What takes place in 1 Samuel chapter 28, the inspired writer says that she saw Samuel. But she didn't recognize it as Samuel because her explanation of, I saw the gods ascending out of the earth. See, that's just her explanation. It was way beyond anything she'd ever seen, and she's very startled about this whole matter, etc. there. And he said unto her, What form is he of? And she said, An old man cometh up, and he is covered with a mantle. And Saul perceived that it was Samuel, and stooped with his face to the ground and bowed himself. So the writer says it's Samuel, and she gives an explanation. Well, it's like the gods ascending up out of the earth, and some old man and some mantle. And that's just her explanation and her perception of what's taking place. But it was a divine intervention that God did send Samuel. And Samuel said to Saul, Why hast thou disquieted me to bring me up? And Saul answered, I am sore distressed for the Philistines. Make war against me. And God has departed from me, and answereth me no more any by, neither by prophets, neither by dreams. You know, he said, neither by Urim. He sort of leaves that out, because back in chapter 22, he sends Doeg, and so Saul is the one that's busy. He kills 85 priests and then their families. So he's pretty low on the totem pole with priests. Therefore I called thee, that thou mayest make known unto me what shall I do. Then said Samuel, wherefore then dost thou ask of me, seeing that the Lord has departed from thee and become thine enemy? Don't you kind of get the picture? If the Lord has departed from you, it's because you're doing wrong and God's against you. Why? Well, because of wickedness. I mean, can't you put the dots together? I mean, can't you like put point A to point B and connect the dots and see that the problem is not with God, the problem is with you, Saul, and your wickedness. You left the Lord, you are in transgression, you're in wickedness and rebellion, and you don't seem to see this. No, that's why God's not talking with you. Verse 17, and the Lord hath done to him as he spake by me. For the Lord hath rent his kingdom out of thine hand and given it to thy neighbor, even to David, because thou obeyest not the voice of Jehovah, nor executest his fierce wrath upon Amalek. Therefore hath the Lord done this thing unto thee this day. So it all goes back to your transgressions, and you're still not seeing the picture. You haven't woke up and smelled the coffee yet. And you have plummeted so far in darkness that you go to a familiar spirit to try to find an answer from the Lord. Evil men shall wax worse and worse. Saul is an illustration of that. In verse 19, moreover, the Lord will also deliver Israel with thee into the hand of the Philistines. And tomorrow shalt thou and thy sons be with me. That is, in death. You're going to die tomorrow. And not only you, but your sons also. And the Lord also shall deliver the host of Israel into the hand of the Philistines. Then Saul fell straightway all along on the earth, and was sore afraid because of the words of Samuel, and there was no strength in him, for he had not eaten no bread all day nor all night. So the word of the Lord from Samuel is that you're going to die. You're going to die. And not only you, but your son. Then it's going to happen tomorrow. And he is terribly, terribly afraid. I think I would be afraid too. He's not eating anything. He's weak. Now, sometimes people fast in that they're trying to focus on God. Sometimes you have people fasting in the Scriptures, and it's because they're trying to focus on God. They are really upset. They're really focused about some matter, and sometimes it will be grief. Sometimes it will be troubles, and they're really trying to get connected with God. And fasting and prayer quite often go together in the Scriptures, and that happens. But that's not the case with Saul. It's not like, well, boy, I'm going to die tomorrow and I really need to be seeking God and get my life right. Oh, they're going to compel him to eat. And you see, he's just a carnal man who lives by carnality. Verse 21, the woman came unto Saul and saw that he was sore troubled and said unto him, behold, thine handmaid hath obeyed thy voice, and have put my life in thy hand, and have hearkened unto thy words that thou spake unto me. Now therefore I pray thee, hearken thou also unto the voice of thine handmaid, and let me set a morsel of bread before thee, and eat, that thou mayest have strength, and you may go your way. But he refused and said, I will not eat. But his servants together with the woman compelled him, and he hearkened unto their voice. So he rose from the earth and sat upon the bed. And the woman had a fat calf in the house, and she hasted and killed it, and took flour and kneaded it, and baked bread, and did bake unleavened bread thereof. And she brought it before Saul and before the servants, and they did eat. Then they arose and went up and went away that night. You see, there is no spirituality about Saul. He is an evil man that has plummeted into sin and to the ultimate event, to go to a witch to find divine counsel. What a slap in the face to God. To go seek a familiar spirit, to go seek witchcraft, to find some sort of answer for the future instead of turning in genuine repentance and turning to God in sackcloth and ashes, in prayer and fasting and making his life right. He is told he's going to die the next day. And his sons are also going to die. And yet, they compel him to eat. Oh, okay. Let's forget about this fasting stuff. You know, hey, let's move on. And that's carnality. Well, you turn to chapter 31. Chapter 30 talks about the events with David. But in chapter 31, it continues on about Saul and his sons die. Now the Philistines fought against Israel. And the men of Israel fled before the Philistines and fell down, slain at Mount Gilboa. And the Philistines followed hard upon Saul and upon his sons. And the Philistines slew Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchishua, Saul's sons. And the battle went sore against Saul. And the archers hit him. And he was sore wounded of his archers. And so here these people with bow and arrows, and they shoot this arrow into him. And then notice there in verse 4, then Saul said unto the armor bearer, draw thy sword and thrust me through therewith, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and abuse me. But the armor bearer would not, for he was sore afraid. Therefore Saul took a sword and fell upon it. You see, in the thinking of some people in our world today, euthanasia, that is a term that means mercy killing. Okay, well, you know, he's really bad, so I'll just go ahead and put him out of his misery. I'm not going to have a part of that. I'm not going to slay Saul, even though he's sore wounded. No, I'm not going to do it. And so he falls upon and finishes the job himself. And when his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he fell likewise upon his sword and died with him. So Saul died, and his three sons, and his armor bearer, and all his men, and the same day together. You see, that's what Samuel, by this divine intervention at the witch of Endor, said, yeah, you're going to die, and your sons are going to die. And it came to pass exactly like God revealed. Well, they take the bodies of, of Saul and his sons, and they're like trophies, and they're carting them all over around the cities of the Philistines, and then they hang their bodies up on the wall. And there's an interesting point here in verse 12 that when the men of Jabesh-Gilead heard of that, what the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men arose and went all night and took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall of Bethshan, and came to Jabesh and burned them there. So they go to take these bodies because they are royalty, and then they burn them. Sometimes people ask the question, what about cremation? Well, this would be the verse that I would be able to cite and to look at that would be anything close to the question of cremation. And that is, they took the bodies. They didn't take the bodies and bury them. They took the bodies and burned them. And that's what cremation is the burning of the human body. Burning is, in science, it's just simply rapid decomposition. If you take a body, you could take a cantaloupe, you could take an ear of corn, and you could lay them all out on the ground there. In time, they will decompose back to the basic elements. That's decomposition. From a very complex thing, such as a piece of corn or a cantaloupe or a human body. And when it dies, it will decompose back just to the basic elements. And when you burn, it's just rapid decomposition. So if you have a question about cremation, this would be my biblical answer, that these valiant men, they cremated the bodies of Saul and his sons. And so people say, is it okay? Is it not okay? Well, I would take it from this verse that it would be nothing wrong with it. It's just simply rapid decomposition. Well, evil men shall wax worse and worse, Paul says. And it ought to be when we study like the example of Saul. Don't head down the wrong path. Because if you head down the wrong path, it doesn't get better. You're just going to get worse and worse. And hopefully we would just kind of come to grips that ultimately we're going to die. And the importance of being right and serving the Lord and following after Him, because it will inevitably happen. And unfortunately, as far as the record shows, that King Saul never made things right. But you do have an opportunity to make your life right even today. That's the blessed side. That's the happy side. There is a plan of salvation revealed in the Scriptures that we can come to God, that we can come to Christ even today. The steps of the plan of salvation is to hear the gospel, believe in Jesus, repent, turn from sin, turn to God, confess Jesus before men, and be baptized for the remission of sin. Those are the steps. And there's the verses, and we give more verses that show the scheme of redemption, of coming to Christ, and the plan of salvation as revealed in the Scriptures of becoming the disciple of Jesus Christ. We're to come up out of that watery grave. The exhortation is to be faithful unto death. If as a Christian we err, we go astray. You know, Saul, he went astray. And he could have come back. He could have got back right with the Lord. He could have made his life right instead of plummeting darker and darker into sin. But if that's our case, that we're a Christian in error, we can come back to repentance and prayer. We're going to sing this song to encourage you. If there's one here, even this morning, that needs to respond to heaven's invitation, and we could help or assist in any way, you come and let us know. While together as we stand and as we sing.
Kneel at the cross.